Hello, and welcome to the San Carlos Computer Club podcast. My name is Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions. If you need computer solutions anywhere on the internet, I would appreciate you getting a hold of me, Scott, at internationalcs.net. And this is the San Carlos Computer Club, a weekly meeting of tech enthusiasts discussing tech topics, tech news, and trying to help solve each other's problems. The following meeting is from today, June 20th, 2020. We meet every Saturday at 9, and this is today's meeting. I hope that you get something out of it. We had some technical problems getting started, but in the end, it turned into a good meeting. So sit back, relax, and enjoy June 20th, 2020, the San Carlos Computer Club. Tech on.
I see two of Scott.
Oh, let me disconnect one of Scott. Okay.
Just one now.
There we go. What a crazy meeting this time. Oh, and I got startup stuff popping up on my screen that's not supposed to be here.
I don't see Scott at all. I only see the San Carlos Computer Club.
Well, I'm here.
Now we have a side view.
Hey.
But your speaker's off, Scott.
You can't hear me? Oh, you're right. Can you hear me now? Testing,
yes.
1, 2. Okay, great. Great. I'm still having technical problems over here, but. But this is as good as it gets. I'm back. I don't know why I was having so much trouble. Oh, I've got to get my list of topics. Did anybody bring topics besides helping Scott debug his system?
I'd asked the question of this new Edge that seems to have downloaded this morning. Well, what's that all about?
Well,
new Edge.
Yeah, the new Edge is based on the Chrome rendering engine. And so the new Edge is like the foundation is the same foundation that's being used for Chrome or for Opera or for Brave. And Microsoft decided to stop making their own engine. They have two different engines that they have pushed. The one that's in Internet Explorer, which has a long life, and the Edge engine, which they finally gave up on because it was just using too many resources. It didn't make sense. Chrome, the Chromium engine, everything's being built for the Chromium engine. And so that is the defunct standard for our web experience. And so it serves Microsoft better to focus on your experience and not worry about that engine. Hey, Pop, glad you could join us. We've been dealing with all kinds of technical problems, if you can hear me right now. And you have turned on your presentation screen. So, can we turn that off? You're already in the meeting. You're going to be in the meeting again, I think. I'm removing your presentation. There's Pop again. Hey, Pop. This has been an odd meeting day. I've just had a number of different technical problems.
Good morning.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay? I've had a series of technical problems today.
I don't know what's wrong.
I'm going to mute your microphone.
I don't know what's changed.
Keep talking.
Turn off camera.
So, Chester, if you can still hear me, if everybody's able to still hear me, what we're talking about is the engine that makes the web pages, that makes your web experience in your browser. And that used to be a competition. It used to be who's got the best browser engine. And the best browser engine would be fast. It would render accurately. So the way that you would expect as a developer something to appear on a customer's end of things would be accurate. It'd have the right margins. It would, the font would show up correctly, if you follow what I mean. The colors would be accurate. And as we've gotten more success, more sophisticated, somebody's phone is ringing.
Judy's phone is ringing.
Is Judy,
and Judy
still
has
with us?
Left the building.
Judy has left the building again. I'm going to mute Judy.
I hope Judy
again.
Has not fallen and can't get up.
Judy! Okay, well, anyway, this used to be in the early 2000s, well, even before the 2000s, we were fighting over who's got the best browser engine, who is the most accurate. And the browser engines were meant to be built on a standard, International Standard Committee, put together the standard. And that way you could write the word San Carlos Computer Club on a website and expect it to look away. And when a customer out there saw it on the screen, it would render the way it was supposed to be interpreted on that screen. So now we're 20 years into this, more than 20 years into this. And that rendering is, being able to do that rendering isn't the issue any longer, because we have very strong engines out there that anyone can grab and use to guarantee that the way a web page or a web app is presented on the customer's side of things will correlate correctly with the way a developer intends it to show up. And since there's these great rendering engines that are out there already that are open source, there's no reason for a organization to dedicate a lot of resources to that engine. Better, since that engine has proven to be so effective, better to just grab that engine and then add services around it. And that's really what Microsoft is doing now, is the new Edge is taking the Chromium engine. It's the same engine that Chrome has grabbed for their browser, and Brave has grabbed for their browser, and Opera has grabbed for their browser. And they're tacking on it services that they think that you're going to find useful. And that's what they're competing on. And so when you look at a web browser now, as we go into the future, you're going to be looking at Edge competing against Chrome. And Edge is going to have all its hooks very easily into the Microsoft stuff, whereas Chrome is going to very easily have all its hooks in the Google stuff. So if you were a Google Services user, like for example right now, we're on Google Meet. It makes sense to use Chrome for Google Meet, because when Google Meet pops into the Chrome browser, it should be expecting everything that's there, because it's developed by the same company. Your history, your bookmarks, the way you cache video, the way you ask to use a microphone, the securities that need to be met to do the activity are all to be expected, because they're built in a Chrome way, and Meet is built by Google's team. And so it should be the most accurate way to have the Meet experience. Whereas if I was to use Outlook, there's a real argument for using Outlook in the Edge browser. because there will be features and hooks that have been put into the Edge browser knowing that Outlook's going to be used. You're going to go to your Hotmail account using Outlook under the Edge browser, and there's just going to be things that pop in front of you that are going to work in a more Microsoft way because you're in the Edge browser. Now, before this was still the case, when they had different engines, the difference now is that they're using the same engine, so you can very easily choose on feature set. You can, you know, forget the Outlook example, forget the Meet example, just say any random internet behavior through a web browser. You like Chrome's way of keeping track of your browser history, or you like Edge's way of your managing of the tabs. Now you can quite literally make your comparison on those intrinsic things that you find in the browser without compromising the experience of the rendering, the page coming up, the app actually working. All those things are comparatively the same. So it's kind of like it's the same picture, but you're able to pick different frames, for lack of any kind of better analogy. You can compete, you can choose your browser based on what kind of frame you want to put the data in.
Which do you plan to use?
Well, being an IT person, I find myself using all of them all the time for different reasons. And actually, this is a good lead-in to a topic that I've intended to talk about before, but I wasn't prepared to talk about it today, but I can bring it up right now. I have the Brave browser, and I'm not recommending the Brave browser, but at the moment, I have the Brave browser set as my default browser. So whenever I click off a web page, in fact, let me go into a presentation mode right now. Let's see. I'll do my entire screen. And let me go over here and put it on my screen. There we go. And we're going to do this screen here. Because I did want to share with you guys the one of the things that I've been doing over the last few months that I find very useful. Come on screen. Is sharing your screen. Which screen is it? Are you guys? Oh, there we go. You are presenting your screen. I think right now you guys would be seeing yourselves. Is that right?
See.
Okay, and now you should be looking at my desktop.
See.
Excellent. Okay. So, the Brave browser, I have set up, Brave, as my default browser. What it means to have it set up as the default browser is that anytime you click on a link, say in email or on a web, a web page is a bad example, but in a document, for example, say somebody sent you Say somebody sent you a Microsoft Word document and you opened it up and there was a link in that and you decided to click on that, that link is going to open up in your default browser. Now, you would think because I'm running Windows, Microsoft Edge or Internet Explorer would be my default browser, but I actually have Brave set as my default browser, and I have it set from many months ago, almost a year ago, because Brave was in the news for being the most private browser. And I would say, as a default browser, that's not a bad reputation for the browser to have, is one that's working really hard to not track you and to block tracking across the internet. And so Brave at that time had a really good reputation for that. I installed it. And so what that means to me is that when I go to Brave to do things, that I'm using DuckDuckGo to begin with, that the browser itself is trying to stop as many cookies as possible. And all these activities that I'm doing right here, they are going into the Brave cache, but they're not going into
in the United States more
into a cache that is accessible by Windows or any other application. That cache is only accessible by Brave. Again, Brave is my example, but it's not necessarily a browser I'm recommending. It's just the one I'm using at the moment. And what I'm sharing with you is a way to have maybe some security in knowing you can click on a link without being as concerned about it being a malicious link. Because by following this procedure, I think I've covered myself pretty well. I've got the Brave browser. I do not use it for email. Like if I want to go to my email as the Computer Club, I would bring up my Chrome Computer Club profile. And if you're still looking at my screen, you can see in the upper right-hand corner, there's a Computer Club logo in my Chrome browser. If I click on that, if you go down the Chrome browser, you can see there are other profiles in my Chrome browser. I've got an old customers in here still. I need to delete that. I'm just realizing. But I've got the bed and breakfast. I've got my own. I've got I've got a testing one. I've got my own, and I've got the Computer Club, which I'm doing here. So I know if I'm doing Computer Club stuff, I go into Chrome under Computer Club. If I'm doing if I'm doing business stuff, I go in under Chrome under my business account. I use another browser. I use Opera for Facebook. And the idea is that I'm just not allowing these different services to collect and use my activities against me. So back to my default browser. So my default browser is empty all the time. I've purposely chosen a browser that has a reputation for great security and privacy. Then I do my browsing activities here, or I open links here. For example, I've got an email. I open up an email. It's got a link in it. I'm sure the link is safe because it's from somebody that I trust. But instead of copying and pasting it, I'm just going to click on it. It opens in Brave. What I know from that activity is Brave does not have any of my passwords. It has not been authorized on my email accounts. I have not used it for my banking, my credit cards, my Netflix, my Skype. Brave has not been that browser that I set as default is never the browser I use for any of my paid services. So when I click on the link in email and it opens Brave, I know at the very worst I may have allowed something to come into my computer, but I have not compromised anything. And what I know about Brave is it sandboxes everything that comes in as well. So I also have not opened a virus into my Windows computer. But the point I'm making is that it has not grabbed a bunch of my passwords. It has not been able to go to Gmail and start sending emails as me or grab the keys that make Gmail available. Because it's my default browser and I clicked on a link, that browser has none of the keys to the kingdom, and so it gets no access if it's malicious. Is there any questions on that concept? Because that's one of the concepts that I'm pushing, is having a default browser that is not the browser you use for everything else. If there isn't a question on that idea, I want to take this idea a step farther. And what I've done with my browser, you should be still looking at it right now, is I have the bookmarks bar, and right, the only bookmark I have on the Brave browser is a bookmark I made. I titled it Burn. And what this is this is the history of my Brave browser. And when I hit the Burn button, it takes me to clear browser data. It's already set for everything, all times, absolutely. I hit this one button, and now anything that was inadvertently put into this default browser, it's been zeroed. So if I clicked on a link, it took me to my default browser, and I look at that and go, oh crap, that looks like it's trying to steal my passwords, or that looks really fishy. Then I can hit that burn button and just eliminate all that history all at once. Is there any questions on that concept? Are these? Am I not able to hear anybody?
Well, I think there are a lot of questions, but it's kind of a new concept, and you got to think about it.
Yeah, yeah. So the idea of this is slightly more sophisticated. I'm going to stop sharing now. Let me turn that off.
So I have a question. I was just going into Chrome, and I've got a new pop-up, and it says turn on sync. I was going to see what my default browser or my default search engine was on Chrome. And
okay.
It says sync your passwords, history, and more on all devices. Google may use history to personalize search, ads, and other Google search services. But I don't want them to do that, I don't think. Do I?
Well, so what it's referring to is this synchronizing that you can do with your Chrome browser, and now you can do it with the latest Edge. And this is one of those competing features that I was mentioning before, that now we are able to compete on how history is stored and what services are around the browser while still having the same experience on the browser. So before you would you'd have a bookmark bar and it would have Bank of America and you click on it, and in Edge it would never ask you to log in, or it would never allow you to log in. You're like, oh crap, that's right, Bank of America doesn't work. I got to go into Chrome to make it work. So you go to Chrome and you'd have a different history experience, you'd have a different bookmark experience, but Edge would work. Now that they're sharing the same engine, Bank of America is going to work, no question. But that bookmark bar may look different. You may add bookmarks to it differently. But one of the key factors is, where is that history and bookmark stored? If you sign into Edge, it's stored on Microsoft services. Where if you are using Chrome and you do the sync that you brought up just now, Judy, it would be stored under Google's Chrome services or Google services using Chrome. Now,
I don't want them to do that.
Yeah, and if you don't, on your device where you've signed into the, first of all, you don't have to sign into a browser. Let me be clear. That is to give you the experience of bringing your bookmarks and history and passwords with you wherever you go. You're doing some of that already with your Macintosh, your iPad, and your iPhone. Apple's been doing this stuff for a long time very successfully in their own way. When you see that sync in the browser, that's the Google way of doing what Apple's been doing a long time. And Microsoft's has been really convoluted until they've changed to this new rendering engine. And it's become crystal clear overnight that it's exactly the same idea. You're just using your Microsoft services instead of using Google services.
Okay. So I just clicked on it and said, no.
Now,
when I installed the new Edge this morning, it asked me if I wanted to sync with Google, and I said yes.
Okay.
So now everything that I had on Google shows up on Edge.
Yeah, and so what that would have done, Chester, if I'm remembering it correctly, is you would have been set up with your Microsoft account, and you might have just started a new one when you did that, or it might have grabbed it from your Windows. Your Windows 10 experience. You may have already assigned a Microsoft Services account, an Outlook account, to your Windows 10, and so when you installed the new Edge, it just picked that up to begin with. And so that was already associated. And then it asked if you want to take all this Chrome data and synchronize it over to your Microsoft stuff. So it all looks the same, but now it's in the Edge, and it's stored on Microsoft services, not Google services.
Well, you're correct in that I signed into my Microsoft account.
Mm-hmm.
Before all this took place. I forgot to mention that.
Yeah. And so what you gave permission was to take all the Chrome information, all the Google data that you've got, and just synchronize it over to Edge. And the idea is for you to have a better experience. So if you've become accustomed to searching through history, you've got the same history. If you're using a bookmark bar, that's full of the same information. Your passwords and your email accounts, your usernames, that autofill when you come to a form, all that should be appropriately the same using the new Edge. The idea is that you don't have to go exploring in Chrome trying to find that or reproducing that again in the new Edge.
I think I understand.
And as far as the default browser concept goes, I guess all I'm pushing is these two concepts. So one is to have as a default browser something that you don't use for anything else. My Chrome is for collecting my experience, my Google experience. My new Edge is for collecting my Microsoft experience. Never the two are going to meet in my world. My Opera is for collecting my Facebook experience. This is just the way I've decided to operate. But the computer, if it opens a link, whether by some automatic process shooting off or by me clicking on a link, it goes to a browser that's not used for any experience. It's a completely blank new experience. And as I use that blank new experience and create an experience, history, bookmarks, whatever it might be, then I have a burn button to get rid of all that stuff immediately. And it's just another form of security and privacy. I feel like things have started settling down on my technology end over here. Is everything working for you guys on that end? Yeah?
Yep.
Awesome. I don't know what was going on.
Can you hear me, Scott?
Perfect.
Can you hear me?
Stanley, I can hear you better than we've been able to hear you the last couple of weeks.
Okay, I got a question. Can you explain Windows Defender for me?
Yeah, sure. Windows Defender, if you're running Windows 10, let me say you should be running Windows Defender.
How does that work?
Well, it's already on the computer. Windows Defender is the antivirus and malware scanner that comes with Windows 10. It's been integrated in Windows since Windows 8. And I recommend it. Most tech people recommend that if you're running Windows 10, you should not install a third-party antivirus. You should use the Microsoft software. And I actually think the Windows Defender name is going away. If I'm remembering this right, it's going away, and it is, let me turn that off for a second. There we go. And I think it's changing to Windows Security. I think that's what they're going to call it. Let me see if they actually call it Defender. I'm sharing my screen right now using a different method, so it might be blurry. I don't know what your experience is. Look at that.
Will it compromise my sharing programs?
In what respect?
Well, like for downloading torrents, you know.
I think at the very worst, when you start the program, the firewall will have to authorize it. But Windows does all that stuff very automatically. I mean, as you start the program, there's a good chance if you're using a third party antivirus, you're probably not using a third party firewall. You're probably already using the Windows firewall. If you're using something like Panda or AVG or McAfee's, there's a very good chance you're only using the antivirus portion of it. But if you are getting off of a firewall that was included with like a Norton's, then when it's uninstalled, well, if it's a really nice program, it should uninstall and then activate the Windows software automatically. And take that with a grain of salt. Out of all the programs I've removed, Norton's has been the worst to turn the Windows software on automatically. And so it's been Norton's that I've had to go back through with a cleanup program and try and get the Windows stuff reactivated.
I tried it for the first time yesterday, and it looked like it wanted to do like a 7-hour scan of the computer. Is that possible?
It is possible, depending on how big your hard drive is and how much stuff you have on it.
Well, I've got 1 terabyte of information, maybe.
Sure. Yeah, so to scan that for viruses is going to take a long time. And then afterwards, what it'll do is it'll just stay with rudimentary scans, like checking memory to make sure something isn't compromised at the moment, checking a new file that's being opened for the first time. It'll run it through a virus. Actually, any file you open, now that I say that, any file you open is going to be checked for viruses, whether it's been on your system 10 years ago or you just downloaded it. But what it'll do is periodically scan those areas that get changed, like your temporary files, your Windows system. Those kinds of areas they'll be considered active areas, and so they will be scanned for viruses periodically. But the entire system will not be scanned unless you choose to have it scan again your entire hard drive.
So if I'm having problems with my browser, that could cure the problem after I do a good scan. Is that possible?
Well, what browser are you using, and what kind of problem is it?
Okay, well, I've been using Internet Explorer without a problem up until about a day or two, and now that I go on it, it looks like it's not following through on going from one page to the other.
So you're running Internet Explorer. I'm still sharing my screen. I hope you guys are still seeing it without too much trouble. Can you guys read stuff? I've just opened.
No, not for me. I can't.
No? Is it really fuzzy?
Yes. But see, with Internet Explorer, I use a program that's provided by the for the visually impaired called Zoom.
Oh, I'm sorry, Stanley. Of course, yeah.
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 It's not the Zoom text that you know to share with your doctor. It's a program that reads my websites. It reads my email, and works perfect. But on my Windows Explorer that was working perfectly up to a day or two, all of a sudden, it stopped. Like if I go to a Walmart to place an order, it will not follow through to the next page.
Walmart, huh?
Well, yeah, but that's yeah. I don't know if that's specific to Walmart. I have to, you know, it's so new, but I use it all the time.
Well, I'm on Internet Explorer right now. I'm going through Walmart's site. For some reason, it just popped up. Oh, it popped up a new window. It sent me over to the Mexican Walmart. So I've got a U.S. Walmart. No, I don't even have a U.S. Walmart anymore. It's all Mexican Walmart. Yeah, use that tienda.
Well, I can...
Let me add that to my shopping cart. Continue to buy. It's going to want me to sign in. You know, Stanley, I've done enough of a preliminary thing here. I expect it to work. So what you might want to do is, you know, those classic things with the web browser. You may want to just
uninstall.
Delete your cookies, delete your history. If you're... Okay.
Yeah, you know, I used to be able to do that stuff with my visibility, but now it's difficult for me to navigate to like to get rid of the cache and things like that. How's the easiest way to get to do that?
Under Internet Explorer, there's a gear in the upper right-hand corner that if you click on it, it'll drop down a menu, and it's Internet options you're looking for. I can't guarantee this is the easiest way, Stanley. This is just the way I know to do it.
Okay, I can do that.
And then under Internet Options, there is... Boy, I feel like it's been years since I've done this. Okay, what it is it's a dialog window, and along the top there's a bunch of tabs, and the last tab to the right is Advanced.
Is what?
The word advanced. If you click on the advanced tab, there's a button at the bottom that says, or almost to the bottom, it's one of the last options on the page, that says reset and has three buttons. And what that reset will do is it will delete all the cookies and cache and all that. You got to hit that button, it opens another window. The next window says, are you sure you want to reset all Internet Explorer settings? And that's what the reset will do. There's one option in this dialog that's a checkbox, and it's delete personal settings. So I would reset without the checkbox, see if your problem goes away. If it doesn't go away, I would come back here. I would reset. I would put a check mark in delete personal settings and reset and see if that makes the problem go away. I'm sorry to say that creates a level of inconvenience, because when it resets, that means you have to put passwords in. You have to bring cookies back. If you're in Mexico and you're on Google, all of a sudden you're on Google in Spanish, yeah, and you have to switch it to English again.
I use RoboForm, which has all my passwords and everything available.
Oh, good. Well, this won't affect that. In fact, back in the day, I used to tell people to use a different browser, because this Internet Explorer was so integrated into Windows. You might want to do that reset to fix a Windows problem. This is no longer the case. But I always wanted to have that reset as an option, kind of like the burn button I was talking about earlier. I wanted to be able to reset Internet Explorer on a whim, because I was trying to fix a silly Windows problem.
Right. Okay. Good. I think I understand what you want me to do, and I'm sure I can go ahead and navigate to what you said.
Yeah. And in the end, if you can't solve this problem on Internet Explorer, I think the best solution is to be looking for a Chrome solution with Zoom's provider, because we're going that direction. And so Chrome's been around so long, they have to be addressing that customer in the first place. But now that Microsoft is dropping the Internet Explorer engine and going with the Chrome engine, they have no choice. They have no future on Windows unless they've embraced this other engine.
Well, I do have two versions of the Zoom text, and one of them happens to be for the Chrome, and the other one is the one that I've been using constantly for the Windows Explorer. The one that I use for Windows Explorer is very, very user-friendly. The version for the Chrome is not user-friendly at all, so I try not to use it. But I do have that option, and it's really so difficult to use it that I don't even want to use it.
Right. Unfortunately, I think that's what's happening. That's where we're at.
Okay. Well, I think I can make that. My choice of programs work with Windows Explorer.
Yeah, let's see if that solves the problem, and then if Internet Explorer is just not going to work for you, then you're going to have to pursue the other solution, which is install the Chrome version. And you can bet they'll have an Edge version very shortly, because that's one of the advantages of this, is that if you've got something that's already working on Chrome, it's going to move over to Edge very easily.
Yeah, my virus program or my Windows cleaning program is called WiseCare 365, and I'm going to uninstall that and use the Windows Defender instead.
Hey, did you notice, I was hoping to point it out, but we started talking about something else, that when I searched my Windows 10 for Defender, it brought up Microsoft, I'm doing it again so that I'm speaking correctly, Defender. It brought up Windows Security Settings, Windows Security, the app, which is basically what Defender was, and the Windows Defender Firewall. So they have dropped the name Defender for their antivirus, but they're still using it for the firewall. And so when we're talking about Defender right now in this meeting, we're all talking about the same thing, this Windows Security Settings. But as we go forward, they've dropped the name Defender.
Well, on me, when I click on a tab, you know, it gives me a choice of the Defender. You know, when I'm like if I'm in a either a document or something, or in a program, it gives me the option for the Defender. Matter of fact, I actually had a 64 gigabyte flash drive from Samsung, you know, QuickSpeed.
Yeah.
And I wanted to check it, and it gave me the Defender thing. And when I pressed Defender, it went ahead and started to not only take care of that little drive, but the rest of the computer.
Right. Yeah. You can set it to do custom scans. It sounds like the rest of the computer got caught up in your custom scan. It should scan when you stick.
No.
Go ahead.
No, I chose full scan.
Okay.
I did see custom scan, but I didn't know what to do with it.
So yeah, what full scan will do is it'll go out across all the different drive spaces that you have on your computer. So anything that's connected, the hard drive, all of that will be blanketed, and it'll take forever.
But I guess that should be done at least once, right?
At least, yeah. Anytime, especially, I mean, I do a full scan of everything anytime I feel like something hinky has happened. I was talking earlier about the clicking on something and having it look suspicious and wanting to just get it out of the computer as quickly as possible with the burn button I created. Well, that's another procedure that I would do. If I clicked on a link, all of a sudden I'm thinking, wow, that doesn't look right. Delete all the history, delete everything. One of my next steps would be going into Microsoft Security and doing a full scan to make sure it didn't embed something in my computer in that moment. I'll also, in the same motions, because that's kind of a panic, knee-jerk reaction to an experience I just had, before turning on Defender, I would many times go to updates to make sure I have today's Defender update. As we're speaking right now, I'm just bringing up Microsoft Settings to see what we're at with updates. and I'm not going to do presentation, but I am going to switch the camera. So some of you will be able to see this. I don't know if it's coming through clearly, like you can read it.
Not really. Well, yeah.
But I've clicked on the Windows button, and I've clicked on the gear for settings, and it's brought up settings. And then one of the last ones here in alphabetical order is updates and security. And there's Windows updates trying to propagate with information. And it normally takes a little bit. But I would.
Okay, Scott. Buddy, see you all next week.
Hey, I wanted to ask you, Judy.
Yes.
I wanted to ask you and any other Mac fans out there that the Worldwide Developers Conference is going to be this Monday at 10 o'clock, and I am going to be watching it, and I will be in the Computer Club meeting if anybody wants to poke fun at it or ask questions about what we're watching. This is the Apple event where they will be announcing new equipment and new services, new pricing probably. And
okay.
That's happening Monday morning, so I'll send out an announcement right beforehand, just like I do with a Computer Club meeting. And
okay.
You guys are all welcome to join me if you'd like. I'll be there, so you're welcome to join me if you'd like.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Scott, you need to add me to your email list, because I'm not getting any email from you.
Is this Stanley? Stanley?
Yes.
I will. Let me make a note of that. It seems like your brother asked me to do the same thing last time for him. And before we get off today, I will do that. Are we still looking at my screen, though? So,
yeah.
Right here, it can see, you can see that the last check was this morning. So there's no reason for me to go and check for updates again. But if the last check was yesterday and I'm about to do a virus scan, my personal habits, I would check again to make sure there wasn't a virus update, because it comes out daily. Sometimes it comes out twice a day because we have so many compromises. And so I would do that first. Go ahead. I'm sorry.
There was an update this morning.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would do this update before I did the virus scan if I was concerned I was compromised with something. Hey, while I'm in the update screen, I just want to point out, if you can see it on my screen, feature update to Windows 10 version 2004. This is a message telling me that my computer is not yet compatible. You may have this same message. If you don't have this message, you're going to see an update being offered to you to be downloaded and installed. It would be below the Windows update. It would be in between these two lines, but it would have a button for download and install. If you happen in this area and you see this, my advice to you is ignore it for the next month. I have no choice but to ignore it. My computer has already been deemed non-compatible at the moment, and it will have a message in here when it is compatible. This is the latest version of Windows 10, and I'm not recommending you move to it quickly.
Mm-hmm.
So I would leave it alone. If you go to updates to see if your Defender's got an update and you see this 2004, it's pronounced 2004 update, I would just leave it alone. I would give it a month, maybe two, to just sit on it. Because there's a bunch of people out there that are going to be having problems with it. Hey, one of the most recent problems is that if you turned off your computer with your printer connected and on, and you turn your computer back on, the printer won't come back on. And the printer won't come back on until you jump through a series of hoops to get the computer, to get the printer port working again. Now, I should have said this is a USB printer problem. If you have a USB printer and you turn off the printer, you could lose the port on the next restart of the computer. And apparently the only way to get it back on is to turn the computer off, turn the printer on, make sure the printer is on, and then turn the computer back on. So there's this, I didn't want to get into printer problems and complaining about the latest update, but this is just a series of the kinds of issues that people have with the latest release and why you should not be the people in the latest release.
I'd like to make one additional comment before departing, and that is today I turned on the captions option, and I'm really impressed with the quality of the captions.
Yeah, it's an amazing feature of the meeting, isn't it, is to be able to watch. I have been so impressed with Google's voice speech to text. I use it all the time on my phone. I use it in searches. When I'm on the Google search page, I'll click the microphone button and talk to the search window. I use Google Docs all the time, and their speech to text for writing documents is dead on. Very happy with it. And then I try and use the Windows keyboard, and it's always got problems. It makes me think of speech to text from 10 years ago. It works, it breaks, it falls apart, it misinterprets what I'm saying. It doesn't work. It just sits there saying, looking like it's going to work. But this Google stuff is amazing.
It really is. See y'all next week.
See ya, Chester. Oh, hey. Hey, before you go, you might appreciate this. Facebook is letting people opt out of political ads. Did you guys see that? So this is a big deal. Elections are coming up. Last time we had an election, Facebook was blamed for Russian manipulation of ads. So you were taught to hate the Liberal Party. Since those instances, Facebook has said they're going to try and stop bad actors on their platform, but that doesn't include special interest groups. Basically, they can spend as much money they want on political ads, and they can say whatever they want. That's been Facebook's opinion, if you guys have been paying attention. They're basically saying, no, if a special interest group has a political message and they pay to get it out there, they're free to say it, even if it's a lie, because that's free speech, and that should inform the audience as much as actual factual data would.
That's also the law.
Well, that's great, Chester. I mean, I'm not actually having that discussion right now. I mean, if that is the law, just to add to that's the law. It's a private company, so whatever they say is the law, right? It's a terms of service. You have no right to free speech on Facebook.
Right. What I'm saying is that the platforms like Google and Facebook, there's a special law that allows them or requires them to publish everything they get and does not allow them to express opinions.
Well, this is getting into the tooth. Yeah, this is getting into that 230 stuff and whether you're a publisher or whether you're a platform and where you sit in all that.
That's it.
Yeah, but what we're really is interesting, I have not appreciated Facebook's position until recently because I felt like it was lip service so that they don't have to do as much work. I really have felt like they don't want a police force. They don't want to pay for a police force. They've got enough of a police force already. And I agree. I think they're a private company. It's not their onus to police bad information. It's done because their users are hoping for it. That's what they want. They don't want to see burning bodies in their feed. They don't want to see graphic sexual torture in their feed. They don't want to see children being abused in their feed. And so if Facebook allows that stuff to pop up, those customers are going to go away. And I said customers inadvertently. Those users are going to go away. They're definitely not customers. They're products.
But the law does allow them to cut out those things you just mentioned. But otherwise, they can't. They can't discriminate.
Well, they can. I mean, but the point of this is that because they're going to leave political messages in, regardless of whether they're true or not,
right,
you can, as a Facebook user, go into your settings and turn off all political ads.
I think that's good.
I think that's awesome. And all of a sudden, I'm totally in favor of Zuckerberg's opinion on this matter. I think that he should not have to police politicians for true or misleading information. I think that it fits in with his personal belief of free speech. I mean, I still feel like the reason that they don't want to police it is they don't want to pay for it. They don't want to be responsible for it. They don't want to be liable for it. But this is a great way for him to go, you can choose whether you want to listen to this garbage or not with one checkbox. And I think that's an amazing thing to add to Facebook.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll see you guys next week. Scott, you can get my email address from Linda.
Oh, great. I will. Stanley, we'll see you next week. And we are just kind of finishing up. I just wanted to let you know, I'll put a link to the article about Facebook and I guess I already sent it out, but I'll send it out again, as well as what on Monday, if you guys are interested in what Apple's doing, I'll be sitting here watching the presentation, and you're welcome to join me. I'll probably be streaming it on YouTube as well, so please come join me. Say again, Bill.
What time?
You know what? I think it is happening at 10 o'clock Pacific time. Let me bring up the link right now because it'll tell me here. And I'll send out an announcement beforehand like I do with the meeting. Yeah, 10 a.m. Pacific, 1 p.m. Eastern time. So what is that us? I think that's 9 o'clock our time or 9 o'clock Arizona time.
What time is it at your place now?
Right now it is 10 o'clock.
Yeah.
Let me look
10
up.
10 o'clock is 20 after.
Pacific. Yeah, it's 20 after 10.
Yeah, so it's 20 after 11 here.
What time are you on?
Mountain.
Time. Pacific time. What time is it in Pacific time? Right now, I guess I'm on Pacific time right now. It says it's 10:20.
You should be on Pacific time.
Okay. So what that would mean is 10 o'clock my time.
Yeah. 9 o'clock my time.
All right. Well.
So before you go, I have to share a comment.
Here, I got to share this.
I was going to ask that too. Cool.
My buddy Justin sent that to me for my birthday.
Yeah, happy birthday. Anyway, our grandson is staying with us, and he wanted to fly the drone, and I took him out into the grass, like we have a big grassy area in front of us. And when I started with the drone, when I fly the drone, I have the controls, but I look at the drone, the physical drone.
Right.
And I got it up, and it's a stabilized one, so it'll just hover.
Sweet.
And I handed him the controls, and it's got the iPhone on it, and he immediately looks down, and he just starts flying. He's got all the controls all worked out, and it's the difference of somebody who didn't grow up on video games, I guess. Yeah, 12-year-old and a 72-year-old, yeah. It makes you feel old right away. And he's a little smart ass to boot. That was his giggle.
Well, anyway, that's, is he good at it? He knows what he's doing, though, right?
Well, he had it moving around a lot better than I did when I first started with it. But he's, in my opinion, he's a little reckless with a $600 drone. You know, I like to be cautious with that kind of thing.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's funny. The kids just grab that equipment, and it's like, wait, you've got to understand the value. Let's assign some value to this before you start trying to use it. Let's say, what if I were to take your tablet for the next 2 months? So if you were to crash this, maybe I would take your tablet for 2 months.
Well, maybe I'd crash your tablet.
Well, now you have an idea of the kind of value you're playing with. It's like, how would you like to be tabletless for 2 months?
Yeah, I know. You have to get a. I tell you what, I started this process a little too late with my children, but they, you know, when we'd go on holidays, there was always this. Well, can we do this? I want to do that. Let's do this. Let's do that. And the last time I took them both on holidays with me, in a real sense, I said, okay, here's the amount of money we have for holidays. Here's your share, and here's your share, and here's my share. And I said, when you have a meal, it comes out of your share. When we fill up with gas, it comes out of your share. So every decision you make, you have to think about how much money you have and how much you have left. And it worked really well. Like the very first time we had breakfast, they both ordered orange juice or something. And I told the waitress I wanted separate checks. And they were astounded at the cost of orange juice.
They were
outraged.
How old are these kids?
Oh, no, well, they were 10 and 12 at that time.
That's great.
It really brought forward the, you know, they didn't have the cash physically in their hand. I didn't trust them that
way. Right.
It just came off their account every time they decided, and they could decide. And I said, once you run out of money, we're going home. That's pretty much it.
No, so, that's a great way to do it. Yeah. I'm going to have to keep that in mind for the next traveling activity I have for my kids.
Yeah, because they have no idea. They just want, oh, let's go here. Let's go there. Let's go to the arcade. Let's do this. You know?
Yeah.
And it's an endless stream of money in their mind.
Now, and I've done similar things. Like we go to the comic book shop. I'm a comic book fan.
Yeah.
And
hey, can you get Spanish comic books?
Well, I can, but it's cumbersome around here locally. Like, I could order them online. I could do digital. Hey, Bill, before I forget, I want to talk to you a little bit longer, but let's shut down this meeting.
Yeah, go ahead. I'll stick around.
You guys, thank you for being with us today. What I wanted to say while Bill was still on and I'm shutting down this meeting is I think I solved my screen rendering problem. I think what's hurting my computer is me trying to have video, trying to have Bill and the other members in my Meet on my 4K display on my laptop. The moment I move it over to a lower resolution display, all the rendering lag goes away. And I think my laptop is choking on itself trying to get this video to appear correctly on my screen, whereas I've got two other monitors over here that are lower res that I can easily do this whole show from, and I don't have to use that high res monitor. So I'm mentioning it now because Bill's going to help me remember for next time not to use the 4K display. And I'm going to say goodbye. I see Dad's still with us. So
I'm saying goodbye too.
Oh, you are? Okay, I was hoping. Are you sticking around to talk to me or? Do you need me to?
I can if you want me to.
No, it's not necessary. I was just wondering if that was the reason you were here. Love having you on, Pop. I'm glad you're here with us.
All right. I always enjoy listening to you, Scott.
I'll talk to you later.
Bye-bye. Bye, Bill.
Okay. And am I gone too? Bye, Terry.
Nope, not yet, Bill. You stay there. And okay, I'm going to switch to me. This is me. And I'm just shutting it down. I'm Scott Stimson from International Computer Solutions and the San Carlos Computer Club. We meet every Saturday. It starts at 9. I'm normally here about 8 trying to test things to make it work. And if you have any computer issues out there on the internet, I'd appreciate you use my services. Look for me at internationalcs.net. If you love this meeting, you want to subscribe to our podcast or see what we're all about, go to sccclub.org. See you next Saturday. Until then, tech on. Stopping that.